Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Black Hills Powwow has become one of the premier American Indian cultural events in the United States. It attracts thousands of dancers, singers, artisans, and several thousand spectators from across several U.S. states, Canadian provinces, and beyond. Joining me now for a preview from SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City, we have with us Stephen Yellowhawk, Whitney Rencounter, and Karen Mortimer. Stephen Yellowhawk is the president of the Black Hills Powwow. Stephen, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Karen Mortimer is with the Minnelusahana Kolakichiapi Ambassadors. Karen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Whitney Rencounter, thanks for being here again, also with MOA, and I'm sure you have many affiliations with the powwow as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori.
Stephen, let's start with you. And for folks who maybe are new to this, let's start from the beginning and give us a little background of what the event is all about.
Well, this year is the 32nd annual Black Hills Powwow. In Lakota, we call it Chesapa Wachipi Naoshkate. And this is actually my ninth year as the board president of the association, and has become one of the largest powwow culture gatherings in the nation and the world. And we're so blessed to have a wonderful community here in Rapid City and the Black Hills to play as host some of the original, you know, lands of our people. And to have this celebration where we're inviting tribes from across the nation and across the world to come dance with us and experience the culture and the medicine of the drums, the sounds, the beautiful music and beautiful regalia that all of our dancers come to bring. We have over 100 vendor booths that come to the powwow and set up and sell their arts, and we have a lot of supporting events. We have a golf tournament. We have a Hesapa Wi, which is our princess pageant that serves as an ambassador for the powwow all year round. And we have a wonderful head staff that make it all go, and that's where Mr. Rencounter comes in. And he's one of our Yapaha, our main announcers that we use. And really, this group of people that we have, board of directors, support, volunteers, sponsors from the community, really make this powwow possible every year.
Stephen, how far away do people come? I mean, tribes from all over North America?
That's correct. We have a lot of tribes that come down from Canada, some that come up from the Mexico area, and then we also have people from all over the world. We even have some dancers that come from Europe that have made their own regalia there, and they want to come and participate and be a part of the event.
Really? Give me an idea how when people arrive then, sort of the scope of even organizing, you know, the events and the dances, how does it break down? How do you sort of keep everybody understanding what's going on and where?
Well, I think our two MCs, we have two masters of ceremonies that do a fantastic job, Reuben Littlehead and Whitney Rencounter. They do a fantastic job of keeping everybody that's in attendance knowing what's going on, know when and when not to do, take pictures, things of that sort. Mm-hmm. And then the informative part, the education, you know, this dance came from this tribe, or what's going on right now is a ceremony, an honoring for someone. And so that's really a big part of their job, and a really big part for those that have never been to a powwow before to be educated and know what's going on.
Whitney, let's bring you into the conversation. How long have your background, like, when's your first powwow? How little are you when you first are experiencing a cultural gathering like this? Tell me that story. Take me back a little bit.
Sure. You know, growing up on the Crow Creek Hunkapati Dakota Reservation right in central South Dakota, you know, we have a powwow there that's over 100 years old, and many of the celebrations across the state, each of the 9 reservations holds their own annual Wachipi, as we say in our language. And when I was a little boy, my grandfather, you know, he sat me down at the drum and he started to teach me how to sing. And he also would spend time, many hours, making regalia to help me to dance. And, you know, that became part of my life as a young boy. And, you know, to hear the songs. My grandfather, he used to use a term that when we sang, he would say, Daku Waka Shkashka, that translates to that sacred energy that moves. Basically, when you're singing songs and when you're using that drum, the drum represents the heartbeat of our people. When a baby is in the mother's womb, you can hear the heartbeat of your mother. And so when you're born into this world, the drum is an instrument that replicates that heartbeat to let the people know that we're alive and well, and have that connection to the natural state of our world, of the, you know, with the animals, that we're all related, we're all connected. And so those are the discussions my grandfather had with me as a little boy. And I became enamored with it. You know, I think I'm one of the only ones out of my cousins that really have, now it's become a big part of my life. So when my grandfather would speak, or when I would attend our annual powwows throughout South Dakota, I was like a sponge. I would listen to the announcer. I would watch the arena director who, you know, controlled the arena and told the dancers when to dance. And, you know, so to me, it was fascinating that this is still part of our culture, that throughout the history of our peoples, that our way of life is still alive and well. And so myself as a young boy, learning and still carrying it on today, it's become a big part of my life, and as well as many other singers and dancers and Eapaha or MCs or folks that travel to powwows really all the time throughout the year. It just becomes a livelihood.
So, Whitney, how often as a child would you have gone to a powwow? How frequent was this a part of your life?
Well, you know, I like to tell people that when Columbus landed on our shores, there was over 550 plus different tribes. And so every one of the tribes across the nation holds their own annual powwow. And so we only have, you know, what do we have, about 52 weekends in a year. So I would say out of those 52 weekends a year, there's at least a many powwows each weekend throughout your territories. And so having said that, you know, we would go mostly in the summer times, you know, when school was out. My grandfather, we would hit the road, head to one of the powwows here in South Dakota starting at the end of May, and then go all the way till the end of August until school started up again. But now with the movement of a lot of casinos, we're seeing many casino tribes that hold their powwows year-round. And, you know, for example, Black Hills Powwow started out in the summertime, you know, and now it's moved to October and in honor of Native American Day here in South Dakota. And so many powwows kind of divide up their weekends so that usually you can find a powwow every weekend throughout the year. But when I was younger, we primarily only traveled in the summertime.
Mm. Karen, tell me a little bit about the opportunity of the Black Hills Powwow as, you know, an opportunity to really come together, listen to one another, sort of make some of those connections, those cultural connections that are so significant to the work of the Rapid City Circle of Friends.
Oh, thank you, Lori. the Black Hills Powwow is an incredibly, it's an incredible cultural gem of our community. It's beyond belief how beautiful it is, but more importantly, as both Stephen and Whitney had said, it's a cultural experience. It's something for us who are non-Native to learn more about our Native American brothers and sisters. Because we are all family, you know, that's really important. And I think we're, by joining and learning and attending and being a part of and sponsoring this wonderful event, we all become better together. So many people love to travel and see wonderful cultural things in other countries and beautiful things and spiritual things and ceremony. And honestly, right here, right in Rapid City, next weekend, you can come and see one of the most beautiful things in the world in terms of a cultural experience. So it's exciting to be able to see the growth in Rapid City, in our community, in terms of their interest, their involvement, their engagement. And we hope to only grow that.
Stephen Yellowhawk, when Whitney talked about the the sacred energy, and tell me a little bit about what it's like to be in the space at different times throughout a powwow. What are those moments for you that really resonate, and that you kind of look forward to again and again? Are there different elements of the gathering that have particular meaning for you?
Well, I've participated in the powwow throughout my years here in the Rapid City community. It was actually the first powwow, major powwow, that I stepped foot in as a traditional dancer when I was 14 years old. And I could still remember that first time entering that dance circle and how proud I was that I was learning and participating in the culture. So I really want all of the dancers, especially the youth, that come here. This is the largest venue that we have here in the Rapid City, the Black Hills, and to be able to showcase all of the talent of these beautiful dancers and singers, where they're center stage and all eyes are on them. Mm-hmm. It's just an awesome opportunity for them, and it's awesome to host that for them, give them that opportunity. And now, 20 years later, being, leader on the powwow board, and it's just a blessing. Feels like it's come full circle, and I'm so thankful that the community has taken ownership and has really brought this powwow to be what it is today.
Whitney, you talked about your grandfather, and that's a tremendous gift that you had him in your life and those memories, and also a tremendous responsibility. In some ways, it seems to me, or maybe it's just a natural fit to sort of carry that forward for you. Tell me a little bit about, you mentioned him getting your regalia ready, and Stephen talked about being a traditional dancer. Can you tell me a little bit about the different kinds of dancers and the significance of different kinds of regalia?
Yes, in the Northern Plains tribes, our main dancing style is the traditional styles. We have the women traditional, our grandmothers who wear the buckskin dress, and they long ago would decorate it with porcupine quills, and then at the arrival of the settlers, that's when we begin to trade for the beads. And so now a lot of them will mostly have beaded tops, which can weigh anywhere to 75 pounds plus, and having to wear that and dance with that on throughout the weekend, it's quite the chore. Yeah. However, our grandmothers and women and even the children enjoy it, because it gives you a sense of pride and the connection to Grandmother Earth, the connection to our traditions, and especially a connection to our ancestors, who have taught and really stood to carry on our traditions. These songs, these dances are our connection to who we are as Lakota, Dakota, Nakota people. And so the women's traditional, they utilize the buckskin. The women would use a plume instead of a feather, because the eagle is considered to be a sacred animal to our people. And so we really hold the plume and the feathers in high regard. And that is something that you earn throughout your life. So it provides that symbol of courage and of doing well by other people. And so same thing with the men's traditional dancers as well. They'll have the beaded regalia. They'll have the pesha. The pesha is something that we traded with the Omaha tribe now in Nebraska. Long ago, there was that society where we would trade and develop relationships with other tribes. And then also grass dance was something that we received during that time as well. And so the grass dancers are another style of dance that the men will do, that my grandfather always said long ago, when there was 30 to 60 million buffalo here, the grass was as tall as a person, or even taller at times. And the way it kind of flows in the wind, that is what a grass dancer replicates. And they will also go ahead of us in front of the camp circles and flatten the area, flatten the grass in preparation for our movement when we follow the buffalo or when we're having a gathering. And then we also have a jingle dress style, which comes from us from the Anishinaabe or Ojibwe people, and that's a medicine dress. and that is very a popular dance. And same thing with the decoration and the way they're designed. And then we also have the fancy feather dancers, which many people would say comes from us, from the southern tribes in Oklahoma and down south, more of a very fancy style of dance. And then we have the women's fancy shawl, which the stories say it derives from a traditional dance. But one of the grandmothers, you know, one day grabbed the shawl and wrapped it around herself and started to spin and dance and move like the butterflies, like the birds. And so those are six of the basic styles of dances. But one of the things that always stood out to me was the compassion, the generosity. Every powwow that you see throughout always provides something to the people. And that's a platform to share these songs, these dances. Some powwows will have a feed, and they'll feed the guests that come to that particular celebration. And many of the community members would step up and provide the meal and cook together and feed, because we want people to live. So that's why you would feed them. And then also, my grandfather, when we would go to powwows, we would be sitting at the drum. And when we would see a dancer go by that did not have regalia, my grandfather would come back to his lab, I would like to call it, and he would prepare regalia. And maybe that later that summer, he would present that young person with a regalia, because maybe they had someone that wasn't able to make it for them. So it's just those generosity type of experiences that I was able to witness that really helps us to understand. This past weekend up in Canada, a drum group that won first place, they won $30,000 for first place. Mm-hmm. And one of the other drums, one of their vans broke down that many of their singers came to the powwow in. And the head singer of the first place champion drum, Northern Cree, he called up that drum group, the lead singer, and he gave him $3,000 at the conclusion of that powwow to help him fix their van to get home. So just those generous things that we see. You know, we always say that these are sacred ways, but the powwow is more of a social gathering. So that's why we invite non-natives to attend, because it's fun. It's a way to showcase. It's a way to encourage our children.
Yeah. And Whitney, the first time I went to a powwow, I was nervous because it wasn't something I had grown up around. I was an adult. And so talk us, or Stephen, whoever is appropriate, talk us through, if this is your first powwow, whether you know, you come from a tribal community or whether you don't, how do you approach it and sort of find your way into you know, learning the next thing and making that connection in a respectful way?
Yes, you know, we've through the excuse me, the race relations that we've done throughout the Black Hills is trying to get people to support the Black Hills Powwow and Lakota Nation Invitational and the other cultural events that we have here in the city. And as we've visited and had conversations with some of the leaders in our kind of the county, I would say, actually, you know, we talk about people will view it like going to another church, and that's why they don't want to go. So that's why we help people to understand that it isn't anything to do with a ceremony per se. It's more of a social gathering. That's why we have intertribal dancing, because you do not have to have regalia to come dance and enjoy the circle that we have, the changleska that is take place there. And so we always say that the powwow is more of some people today, they've almost turned into a sporting event, in that the dancers that come here and travel, the reason why they travel so far is because they come here to compete, and they want to bring their best songs, their best dances, and so they compete with other top dancers, and at the end of the competition, at the end of the powwow, we award the winners. And so, you know, matter of fact, the grand entry, that's when all the dancers come in together. That isn't a traditional way of our people. That actually, the stories that I talked to Dr. Ronnie Tice and my grandfather, many elders say, you know, that actually came from watching the rodeo grand entry long ago. And that's where that idea. So it was kind of borrowed in that way to showcase all the dancers and to help people, the visitors, to see the different dances. So, you know, it's something to understand that everybody is welcome, you know, and the dancers, the singers, they're happy to have people there. And just like anything, any other cultural event across the world, the more pre-research you do, the more you learn. Like, you can go to powwows.com and walk you through all the different categories and what you would be witnessing. You know, they have a website specifically to teach about that. And Black Hills Powwow, same thing in their brochure or their informational pamphlet they have when you come in. It talks you through all the categories, and it shows you what you'll be watching and why, you know. So the more research you do, the more comfortable you get, the more you will enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it isn't something more of a technical thing that's happening. It's something that you have to experience and feel and enjoy. Mm.
Thank you so much for that. Stephen, let's close with some details on location and times and how people can get there.
All right. So the powwow will be held downtown here in Rapid City at the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center. It starts this Friday, October 5th. Our first grand entry will be at 6:30. And then we'll have two grand entries on Saturday, 12:30 and 6:30. And then our final grand entry on Sunday will start at 12:30. With the vendor booths and all of the artists that are set up, we actually open the doors 5 o'clock on Friday and 11 o'clock both Saturday and Sunday for those that want to come and see that. We were paying out over $100,000 in prize money this year for all of the dancers and singers, so it's going to be an exciting time. We're inviting a couple new categories. We've added southern categories for our southern brothers and sisters to participate in the traditional style of dance and compete in that way. But yeah, very excited. Just want everyone to come dance with us.
Can't wait. All right, let's get there. Thank you so much, Stephen Yellowhawk, Whitney Runcounter, and Karen Mortimer. We really appreciate your time.